All right, the final, hopefully, I think this is the final lesson. And then next week will be the final. So I've got us on Baptists in modern Europe. Okay. Now, Ireland has had its part in the Catholic Church history to its detriment. Shouldn't Ireland have had its part in Baptist, is our fill-in history, with some serious Baptist church planting being done and experienced some real biblical revivals and a great national awakening that turns the hearts of this nation to God? Shouldn't it have more than just Catholic church history, is my question. It could, but only if some passionate Bible-believing Baptists earnestly contend for the faith that was once delivered unto us in the Bible and faithfully pass it on to the next generation. So what are the statistics of Baptists in Europe? Well, the following statistics are constantly changing and are based upon poor data, I know. But there are three layers to the following data. A, you can find public information available, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. Churches that are not internet savvy and are currently invisible can only be guessed at. And then churches that don't want to be included also represent a substantial actual percentage of the overall numbers. Now, the population of Europe is currently 700 million, and it goes over into Latvia and Estonia and stuff. But that's 700 million people in Europe on an expanded, not just the EU. Now, there are many kinds of churches that preach the gospel and win souls. There are the Brethren churches, Pentecostal, and some charismatic, they got the gospel. Fundamental Protestants, non-denominational and community churches, but most of these have so many added traditions and ideas about Christianity that their doctrine and their practice is nothing like that in the first century churches. So let's talk about the number of Baptist churches, at least in name, in Europe. The European and World Baptist Federation of Churches includes 12,942 churches, and they have 739,105 members. Now, those are bona fide members, not just people who attend. The Association of Baptist Church in Ireland have 121 churches, but they don't publish their membership numbers. The Independent Baptists in Europe have 423 churches in Europe spread out. Independent Baptists, like what we are. So the number of members in all of those Baptist churches is probably about 1 million. When you add up the World Baptist Federation, the Associated Baptists, and the Independent Baptists. So the total number of people attending those Baptist churches would be somewhere around three times the number of members. That's usually the case. So did you notice how many of those Baptist churches identify as IFB churches? Not many compared to the 12,000. Now, how many other Baptist churches might exist in Europe but are not listed on the internet? Probably another 400 to 500 churches would be my educated guess, many with small congregations, adding an additional 5,000 in members or at least attendees. So what is needed to start more IFB churches in Europe? Well, it's very important not just to start churches. I think it's a mistake when we only think we need to start churches, because it's like starting families. It's no good having babies if you're not going to grow them all the way to maturity. So you need to have strong, already established churches as well. Number two, we need to emphasize Bible Institute training. It is a very effective means of passing on. Paul didn't say he passed on teaching to one. He says, the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, not just one man at a time. So it's not just mentoring, which is an important part, but it is it's okay to have it in group organized sessions. Church planning meetings and training throughout Europe would be very valuable, and that is already going on. There are plenty. I have to really get more plugged in and get you guys more plugged in opportunities with church planning meetings and church planning training that's already going on in Europe. There is a lot of work being done down in Thessalonica, over in is it Moldova or Moravia? What's next to Romania?
Moldova.
Yeah. There's a lot that has gone on there. There is a lot of church planting going on in, obviously, in England. But, boy, I tell you, I'd love to find out how to crack the Italian nut, because most of the guys that I've ever known in my years of missionary service who've gone to Italy have just crashed and burned, and they just head home very discouraged. And, you know, that sometimes we blame the missionary, sometimes we blame the culture, but maybe if we were just better prepared, maybe if we just sat down and worked on it and prepared for it differently or whatever. I don't know what the answer is, but we can't just keep throwing people at something expecting, well, maybe it'll work, when, you know, you plan, you develop, you sort of, sometimes it's our own limitations that we put on ourselves because, you know, we bring our culture into the culture instead of bringing just Christ into it. All that goes in. I just would love to have more, my heart would be involved in more church planning meetings and training. It'd be very important to promote and use national pastors and church planters. I'd love to, you know, I loved having Brother Pereira. Man, he's my kind of guy. He's a Portuguese man pastoring and starting churches in Portugal. That blows me away. That's fantastic. Guess why Edward Figali is doing so well?
Because he's from the Middle East.
He's from the Middle East. So that's not a bad thing. Now, sometimes we sort of forget that the Irish need to be going into other countries and training those countries. But that's not the only way it's done. So it's not one or the other, national versus foreigner. It's both of them being put together. And something else that helps more churches get started in Europe is a Christian school movement, where we have kids brought up in a Christian school, and that would raise the next generation in a culture of Bible, not just at home, but in such a way that, I don't know, I've seen it work in several other countries, especially in America, obviously, but I believe Christian schools would be so valuable. If you had kids, you'd be going, I wish there was a Christian school, so my kids wouldn't be influenced by all of the stuff that comes at them from age 10 on. Now, there are many obstacles to independent fundamental Baptist churches, church planning in Europe. There's an over-dependency upon American missionary leadership. And that's an obstacle. There is too limited cooperation among Baptists. That hurts us. There's a lack of biblical teamwork in church planning. What we do here, the fact that Dan Everly and Andrew Day have been here, and I've tried for decades to cultivate a teamwork instead of just me, because it's not supposed to be one guy at the top. Biblical teamwork in church planning. Number four, there are no fill-in pastors for the current church planters to lean on. You know, we get a place where there are people who are ready to preach and who would, you know, and I truly, in my heart of hearts, would be ready to leave if I knew somebody was ready to take over, or if I knew that there would be somebody who would take over. Number five, there's no emphasis on European-based training of Europeans. It's very little emphasis on it, and we need that. Number six, there's a lack of general training of the membership of Baptist churches in Baptist distinctives. So no wonder there aren't going to be more Baptist churches, because most people don't know what it means to be a Baptist. Number seven, there are limited funds for missionaries and those interested church volunteers to attend church planning meetings and participation. We don't make it possible for make it easy for people who want to attend to help fund, oh, listen, we're going to help you get there. You know, say there was a preaching session over in Lyon, France. Man, we gotta, like we would for a missions trip, we try to raise money, send our kids, teenagers, but man, if we could send our men and say, listen, we're going to make it possible for you, just only have to pay half the price. Because we have to be that interested. Number 9, there's too much Americanism in churches started by American missionaries. Another thing that is an obstacle, the increasing levels of governmental restrictions on missionary visas throughout Europe. And right now, Ireland is becoming the hardest country for any missionary to come into. They have made rules that are more restrictive than anywhere else, which is kind of weird. I thought EU wouldn't allow one country to have more restrictive entrance than others, but that's how it is right now. Number 11, there are no known IFB mission agencies in Europe that could really help new church planters. Wouldn't it be neat to actually, you know, we helped manage Carol Keefe's money, but there's no mission agency that would really help out any missionary that wanted help. That would be the job of a church that has missions-minded, a church in Ireland that really just focused on helping missionaries get started in Ireland. That would be so fantastic. Number 12, there's a lack of integrity in church planters. You know, it can be too easy to get money and not actually do the work of the ministry. It is easy for people to raise funds and then not do anything. And the reason why there are missionaries who go to the field and then come back because they really weren't there to start a church. And I don't understand it. Number 13, Europe is now very multicultural, so churches need to plan to reach the new cultures. And yet always mainly focus on the national population for stability in the new churches in the long run. So, you know, if all you want to do is reach the Irish, you're missing a lot of other people that can be reached. But don't only reach the other cultures, because they will come and go. You need to reach the Irish as your main group, because the other cultures come and go if they get a chance. And so that's an obstacle to come and to face. Now, number E, expect greater persecution and restrictions as we endeavor to preach the gospel throughout Europe. And it's the truth of 2 Timothy 3:12, and yea, and all that will give godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. So, I didn't know that would be over that quick, but that's that quick.
That is,
all right. That is the end.
Bibliography in the next page.
That's it. All right, let's go over in preparation for your final. Tell you some of the things that you need to look out for going all the way back. It is very important for you. Also, have you looked at an outstanding Baptist in church?
I did the essay, yeah.
Okay,
good. I have it on my memory stick here, but I was going to print it up over at the office, obviously. So.
Yeah, do it another time. You can give it to me next week.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you got that. Great, great. All right. So I want you to get, you know, starting at the premise, look at what our focus is on, not just any old church, but the idea of, you know, what's so exclusive about a Baptistic type of church. All of the characteristics of a church, like I say, a church is 4 things. It is its people. I'm looking at page 4. It is a plan. It is built on absolute truth, and it's supposed to be pure. So those 4 things, things like that, are very important. And I give 3 types of church groups. There's Roman Catholics, Protestants, and what I call Anabaptists. Not just the Anabaptists of history, but people who are rebaptizers or nonconformists. So would you say that most Catholics in Ireland, could it be true, if I said true or false, most Catholics are conformist Catholics?
So.
Okay. Because you just go with the flow. If these people were born in a Muslim area, they would all be Muslim. Oh, yeah. If they were born in a Protestant country, they would all be Protestant. So we call those conformists. Mm-hmm. Well, as a general rule, Baptists are nonconformists. They make a choice to step out of whatever they are in, whatever culture they're in, to follow Christ. So that's Baptism. That's why I use the word nonconformist.
They don't conform to conservative Catholic doctrine, but they just conform to the culture
of Catholicism. Culture. Yes, and they're a member of the church, but only as a conformist, only because everybody else is a member.
Yeah.
That's all. All right. Let's see. So, I give you two or three big definitions of what is a Baptist church, but the big one there, it's a group of believers that base every belief and every aspect of Christianity solely on the Bible, to the exclusion of traditions and cultural norms. So that is a very important definition. I'm going to ask you, you're going to need to know a couple of these Baptists that were well-known or not so well-known based on, like, you know, who was the first missionary? I'll ask you, who was the first missionaries for America who were not Baptists when they went to the mission field? And that's Adoniram and Ann Judson and stuff like this. So be aware of those. Who mainly wrote church history?
Catholics.
Usually it's Catholics. So they're not going to give much glowing report to Baptists, and even the Protestants aren't going to give much credence to it. And if you are the hunted, rarely do the hunted get to sit down and write memoirs and things. So you don't find a lot of research coming up showing you stuff on early Baptists. We just have the Bible, so that helps us to go. That's where we go to. So I give you a definition of what is a church, not just what a Baptist church is, but I think it's on page 9 in yours as well. So what is a church? Do you have that?
Yeah.
That's another long definition. So then we go through from page 11 on, we talk about what are the characteristics of a true Baptist church, and it's Bible-believing, saved and baptized believers, voluntary association together, it's autonomous, it is independent of other churches, voluntary association together, exclusive and restrictive membership. Already have autonomous, have that. Simple church governance. What type of government does an independent Baptist church go by? Not external state government, but what is
it?
Congregational. Thank you. Very good. I'm not sure how to ask it right, so that's good. You know what the three ordinances are? Let's see. What's the big deal? I'm going to ask you now, philosophical. What's the big deal of pedo baptism versus adult baptism or believer's baptism? What's the big deal? What difference does it make? Well, if you have a Christian here, just says, I was baptized as a baby. Okay, what difference does it make? Why would you be motivated to say, oh, that didn't count? You must be rebaptized.
Because it's not valid. It's not valid if it's not voluntary.
Good, it's not valid. But it also affects other things. It makes them consider that was part of their salvation process. Instead of, it's an after salvation act.
For Protestants, don't though. I'd imagine. I know the Presbyterians don't see it as part of salvation.
They think it is part. Yeah, but
Catholics would.
All right. Now you're in the mood of, they're different Protestants. not sure who you've talked to, but most of the Protestants that I've dealt with believe that that is a sign that you're in the covenant relationship with God. And if you don't get baptized, you're not in limbo like it was in the Catholic Church, but you miss out on covenant blessings. And you go, all right, but so a child has to be baptized. For the child to get covenant blessings, doesn't make sense to me, but that's what I understand them to constantly say, yeah, but it's important for that, you know, stuff. Go, I don't think so. I know not. I just don't know why they put that emphasis on there. Okay, but I'm trying to get you to, let's work from a primarily Catholic background. They believe that they begin to rest upon their baptism as sufficient to help them get saved as a process. They believe it is all that is necessary instead of, like we say, that it's not being baptized at all. It makes it so that your doctrine is not biblical, your doctrine is traditional. If you believe in pedobaptism, you're not appealing to any scripture. So you're appealing to a tradition. So that's why it's important that it be emphasized. And then, finally, when you tear that down, then you can say, now look at how important it is in the Bible. Not to save anybody, but that it is always associated with your salvation. It is always after your salvation. And it is something you do by choice as a believer, and usually as an adult. So if Jesus put that much emphasis on it, then pedobaptism has to be rejected. And has to be rejected as heresy. let's see.
So all these aspects, characteristics
of that? Yeah, I'm just going through because I will ask you to list some of them, not all of them.
Oh, yeah. They won't have to be in order.
No, they won't have to be in order. But I may ask you, like, what is the priesthood of the believer? Let's see. So I also give you, you'll need to fill in that an acronym, the Baptists summary. What does the B stand for? What does the A stand for? What does the P stand for? Just to help you to remember 8 characteristics. What was in existence before the concept of the church in the Jewish mindset?
The nation of Israel.
Mm-mm. After that. During the time of Christ, when he mentioned the church, there was something that was in existence that was similar to it but wasn't a church.
The synagogue, was it?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So Jesus didn't come and say, all right, we need the synagogues now to preach the gospel. No, he started churches. But the synagogue had a similarity to it. It was local. The people gathered regularly every week. They used it as a time for teaching and reading the scriptures. And then it stops. Right? They didn't preach the gospel. They didn't, they didn't have the deacons, and they didn't have, basically it was almost like the brethren, where somebody just stands up and reads, makes comments, sits down, and instead of a pastoral authority or instead of a church concept that is New Testament, they only went so far, which is interesting. They came to that conclusion, maybe it was Ezra, they guessed that it was Ezra who implemented it, so that people were much more tied it together as a believing community, because Ezra was trying to bring back all these people so they didn't go into idolatry again. And so he localized them. And it's kind of interesting that a person under the Old Testament would come up with something that was on its way to being a church.
It's in the Psalms, isn't it? They burned up all the synagogues of God in the land.
Correct. The word synagogue is there, yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. People actually point that out as an error in the King James Bible. And I don't have a great answer for it, other than the fact that the concept of the synagogue evidently was there. And so the King James translators went ahead and used it.
So what is the what should the word, what did I say? Oh, the word should be
synagogue. That I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember them saying, you know, you can't use the word synagogue there because synagogues didn't exist. You go, well, maybe not, but the design of it was. I don't know. I don't have a great answer for it. I just trust it. All right. I'll ask you to name a couple of the different kinds of Baptists that are in existence today. I'll ask you true or false, like Baptists are Protestants and stuff like this. Why are we not Protestants? This is very important. There are some reasons why we're not Protestants. Doctrinally, we're not the same as Protestants.
Where is that again?
I don't know, page 33. It's under Baptists are not Protestants, Roman numeral 11. So I'll ask you reasons why Baptists are not Protestants. One, our doctrine is different. The head of our church is different. We don't have a human head. We're not like Lutherans having Luther. Calvinists having Calvin. The Baptists never were part of the Roman Catholic Church, even though Protestants were. And then we're not, we don't believe in Peter Baptist and things like this. There were just like three or four things there. We talk about who are the first Baptists and the problem with landmark Baptists. If you could summarize, what's wrong with being a landmark Baptist?
Landmark Baptist, that's, it's wrong because you can't trace a perfect line of good churches throughout history.
Correct. Does that mean that the Baptist Church is therefore not a true church because they can't trace their leadership and their church organization?
No.
Right, what illustration did I give you to show the principle of a Baptist church?
What was it again?
A lost cow.
I
right. Well, look at that. Let's see if you can. All right, it's right there on page, just a few pages back. I've got on Roman numeral 8, capital C2.
What was the example of the last guy?
Story is told of two farmers whose field joined alongside. Both farmers had their own cows, but one day one of the farmers noticed a cow was missing. He asked the farmer next door to take a look through all his cattle and see if she was there. The other farmer glanced through his cattle and declared it was not in his herd. A year later, the farmer who had lost the cow noticed the very cow feeding on the grass next to his fence, and he waved down the farmer across the fence. Pointing to the cow, he declared confidently that that was his lost cow. The other farmer asked how he knew it was his, to which he answered because of all the distinctive marks that his cow had been born with. Her right eye had a black splotch around it. It had a limping back left leg. She had a brand on her right back hind leg. The other farmer was embarrassed and said, well, yep, that's your cow for sure. Sorry I hadn't paid more attention to the details. So it is with Bible-believing Baptists. We can look to the Bible to see what the church marks were that she was birthed with at the beginning of the New Testament, and then compare with all the churches today to see which one is actually a true Bible church. And Baptists consistently went out. Not that they're perfect, because I'll ask you that. Are there any perfect Baptist churches? But that they match the characteristics that the churches are birthed with. So that's how come we work. See, a Lutheran has to match Luther's teaching. I'm not a Calvinist because I don't match his teaching. And so, but I'm a Bible-believing Baptist because I match the Bible in that teaching as far as I can. So, let's see, we see Baptists are not Protestants. Who were the first Baptists? Was John the Baptist the first Baptist? Sounds like it.
No.
No, thank you. He was not.
Who was the first Baptist? Montanus, is it?
Well, I've got a couple of different ones that are listed there.
That one, the list.
I know, he's on the list. I got the Donatists, and I got you got Paulicians. Who are the Baptists? The Montanists. Montanus, who unfortunately announced that he was a prophet, but was very simple in his theology and practice, and was very biblical, except he believed he was a prophet. Now, I got a problem. I don't have a problem. I have a problem with making judgments on some of these people that say that, for example, there are some historians that say that some of these guys, some of these Christians in the first, in the second, and the third century actually were doing miracles. And not like Patrick's miracles, but actually were still healing. And I don't know. I would say they probably didn't, but that there were shadows of the first century Christians, because John was alive until 95 AD. And I'm guarantee you, he still probably was doing a few miracles on the side. I have no idea. He didn't heal himself. I don't know. But if somebody claims to be a prophet, I go, well, man, I wonder if he had a shadow of the gift or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, people, I just sit back and I go, is it? I don't believe in miracles, obviously. I'm a cessationist. After the completion of the Bible in somewhere around 100 AD. But I believe in shadows of things working and people having close to, and they're very close to the apostles. Polycarp was a disciple of John, the apostle John. And so I trust his writings to be pretty good, although he may have a wacko statement everywhere there, here and there.
I started reading the Church Fathers recently. I read the first century ones and kind of like second century ones to start.
The Ante-Nicene Fathers?
Yeah, Polycarp. Yep. And I noticed there's a lack of any, they don't talk about miracles, tongues.
There you go.
They don't talk about any of that stuff. They only talk about it as being passed.
You know? Agreed. And I completely agree with that. I just, whenever somebody finds a flaw with somebody, says he claimed to be a prophet, I go, why? Is there something else that he might have meant? Or something else? I don't know. I just don't think they're all wackos. I think that they were doing pretty cool stuff. So maybe it was, you know, when it comes to Baptists. Obviously, if I'm a Baptist going by the Bible, I believe the Apostle John was a Baptist, even though he didn't use the name. Jesus was the first Baptist, I figure. That's what, if you're going to be really, because he's the definitive standard. And if I'm going to be so bold as to say that I'm trying to go by the Bible, then I can say I'm not just Christian, but I identify as a historical Baptist. That's where it goes to, so. Let's see. Patrick Ireland.
Landmark Baptist Brothers, is that the same?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. Exactly. So, when and where was the first recorded Baptist church in history? Obviously, I give you the Montanists, the Paulicians. There are all of these groups, and they're always pointed to as saying they're diverse, but nobody was more persecuted than Christians, than Bible-believing Christians. And so, I try to step back from the history books. The Ante-Nicene, the Post-Nicene Fathers were all written either by Philip Schaff, who was a And he was a Protestant, but he just loved the Catholics. Or they were written by mainly Catholics and so on.
Schaff, what did I say? He's a Catholic.
He was Catholic. No, Philip Schaff.
Protestant, was he?
You know? I know that he loved the Catholic Church, but I don't know if I've ever said that he was a Catholic. I don't remember him being Catholic.
All right. I'm pretty sure he said he was Catholic before.
I might have.
I thought he was a Catholic.
He is in everything but name, as far as I can remember. I'd have to look him up. But Philip Schaff does the definitive work on church history, including Protestants. But I want to say that he was a Protestant. But he was basically on the side of the Catholics throughout history. So
I'd love to get his book, actually. It's probably take up a whole bookshelf.
I have it. I have Philip Schaff's church history, if you want to borrow it.
Whole thing?
It's a two-volume set.
It must be huge, is it?
No. He wrote several big volumes, but church history... No, and you actually can get it for free and put it in Kindle and read it.
But yeah, you have it on eSword.
Okay, yep, that's it.
But, like, you know, I can't can't really read it on a computer screen. It's just annoying.
It's boring. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
But I just read bits of it, and it just seems really good.
You do need to know that the line of English churches can be traced back to 1610 in Holland. That's number 21 in that list there. You need to know who Charles Spurgeon was, William Carey, where he was a missionary, Adoniram Judson, where he was a missionary.
Where's the thing on 1610?
That's in the list of 1610. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at number, do you have it there in number 21?
21, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, John Bunyan, what did he write?
Progress.
Right. Have you read that?
I listened to it.
Oh, have you heard it?
Yeah.
In his original, or was it the new?
The original, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's
dramatized.
Oh, really? It was dramatized. I love it. But people can't read it. They're like trying to work through it.
Hopefully I'll get on to reading it sometime.
Yeah, you got plenty of time, so. All right. I want you to know some of the obstacles to church planting in Europe. So, okay. Knowing that, you'll have a good ballast. Outlook on it.
Sonic 67 then.